All right, welcome to Making the Argument. Before we get started, I have a very important announcement. We have a brand new deal with GoodRanchers.com. That's right. If you go into Good Ranchers and you use promo code Nick and you sign up for one of their subscriptions, you're not only going to get $15 off, but do you remember the old deal where you got 2 pounds of ground beef with each order? Well, we just upped the game. That's right. You can choose top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon now. Every single order you get on that subscription is going to come with free top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon. You get to choose which one if you use promo code Nick. And again, $15 off on top of that. That's a savings of $480 in meat by signing up for one of those subscriptions. Not to mention the fact that if you are looking for a gift for someone that is impossible to shop for, you can go on to goodranchers.com and get one of their brand new gift boxes. Now, this is a limited time only offer. It's part of their overall Black Friday special. So go on to goodranchers.com to get more details. Sign up for promo code Nick in order to get that deal, and let's get on with the show.
Because one thing I've learned is this, in politics and in combat, cowardice is contagious, but so is courage. And if you're willing to be the first person over those ramparts, you will be shocked at how many people will come with you. I'm asking you to come with me. I'm asking you to be a part of the generation that will restore the promise of this country and breathe new life into it.
Hi, this is Nick Freitas, and welcome back to Making the Argument. Today, we're going to be talking about prescription drug prices. We're less than 30 days out from the election at this point. It has been a great opportunity to be able to come and talk about all these different issues, these policy positions, so that we can inform voters and put them in a good position to be able to make an informed decision on Election Day on November 3rd. We did healthcare last week where we talked a little bit about kind of the overall concept, not just the process of getting healthcare out to people, but the economics of it. You know, how do we do it in an effective and efficient way? And a lot of those same principles apply when we're talking about prescription drug prices. Unfortunately, you have a lot of politicians that offer up solutions that don't seem to have any concept of how basic economics, basic logistics, supply and demand works. And the problem with this is they end up offering really, really good, feel-good, simple-sounding solutions to very complex problems. And when those solutions get implemented, or solutions in scare quotes here, get implemented, they don't actually achieve the sort of results that people are expecting. In fact, in many cases, they do more damage than good. And one of the biggest issues that we've talked about lately has been about prescription drug prices. We've had legislation in the Virginia General Assembly about this. You've heard various plans put forward by politicians at the federal as well as the state level. And so what I want to take a little bit of time here to do is talk about, you know, what is the current state and what sort of actions has government already taken with respect to interfering or attempting to regulate or tax the prescription drug market? So just like we talked about with taxes and regulations and healthcare, this is ultimately a supply issue, right? This is what this fundamentally comes down to. If you see a prescription drug and it's incredibly expensive, there's a lot of factors that go into that. It's not just greedy pharmaceutical companies. I'm not saying that that can't be a component of it, but again, as we discussed before, you can go sit on your couch and be greedy all day long. It's not going to make you wealthier. It's not going to allow you to set prices above what people are willing to pay. The real question is why are prescription drugs so expensive, especially ones like insulin, where the patent for insulin was sold in the 1920s for a dollar? So there's people see this and they think to themselves, there's something wrong here, and they're absolutely correct. There is something wrong. The question is what? So as we look at prescription drugs, and we look at pretty much anything in the economy that you're going to make, the more people that we have stepping forward into the marketplace in order to create a particular product or service, generally what ends up happening is you have a downward pressure on prices, you have an upward pressure on quality, and an upward pressure on accessibility. Because whenever something becomes expensive, more people come into the marketplace to be able to provide that sort of service or provide that sort of good, in this case, a pharmaceutical. And that, again, has positive results throughout the economy as prices lower. So why is it, if there's such a demand for certain key drugs like insulin, like things that people desperately need in order to be able to remain healthy, in order to help with certain conditions that they have or to recover from certain operations they've had, why is it the prescription drugs seem to get more and more expensive? And a big part of the answer to that question is government involvement. because the government has been so involved in regulating the manufacture, regulating the research and development of pharmaceuticals, we have a situation right now where it has become incredibly expensive to go through the research and development process in order to be able to create new pharmaceuticals and then to be able to go out and sell them. Because not only does organizations like the FDA regulate the process by where we research new drugs, but it also regulates the marketplace on who can actually sell them. And this has to do with granting monopolistic style privileges to a select few companies. And that completely eradicates any sort of competition that we would normally have within the prescription drug market in order to bring down prices. So that's what we're going to talk about today. What is the FDA doing, and why is it that, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, it took maybe 7 months to approve a new drug, and now it can take up to 7 years to approve a new drug and cost literally tens of millions of dollars to go through the process. And in order to do that, we have to actually talk about a drug that came out a while back. It was called thalidomide, and this was a drug that was really popular in Europe. It was used to treat cancer. It was used to treat leprosy. Later on, it started being used to treat morning sickness. And unfortunately, this drug actually caused significant birth defects within Europe. But the FDA in the United States actually determined that it wasn't safe for generalized use. And so we didn't have the same problem within the United States that a lot of European countries did with the broad use of this drug that clearly wasn't safe for pregnant women to be used while they were in the midst of their pregnancy. Now, the question is that, okay, if the FDA caught it under the current regulations that it had, well, then what changed? Or did something change? And the answer is yes. A politician saw what happened with thalidomide and decided that we needed additional regulations with the FDA. And essentially what happened is you took an FDA process that was actually fairly efficient. It was very good at determining whether or not a drug was dangerous for consumption or if it was dangerous for certain people to use. And because of the additional regulations, and again, this was in response to a problem that the FDA had already solved. But in response to that, additional regulations were added, and over the next several decades, it literally went from about 7 months to approving a new drug to up to 7 years to approve a new drug. It went from, you know, an expensive but manageable process to go through the research and development to literally costing tens of millions of dollars to be able to go through the process. And the result was that even though the United States remains one of the leading countries for research and development on pharmaceutical drugs, it has become significantly more expensive and fewer firms can afford to even compete in that process. Now, the government's solution to this was, okay, we're going to make United States companies go through an incredibly expensive process, but we're going to put in protectionist policies, whether it be tariffs, or we're going to put in patent policies or property rights that essentially create an environment to where once they get through the tens of millions of dollar process in testing the drug, they'll be the only ones allowed to sell it. Sometimes this is for, you know, 7 years, sometimes it's for significantly more than that. And what this does is essentially eliminates competition. And, you know, you would think to some degree that, okay, we understand when somebody gets a patent, they have a 7-year ability to be able to, you know, since they're the one that came up with the design process, they're the ones that went through the process and assumed the risk, then of course they should be able to sell this and someone shouldn't be able to come and essentially steal their intellectual property in order to create it themselves. The problem with the way that the FDA does it, however, is that one, because the process is so expensive, very few can afford to even do it in the first place. So that's the first thing where they bar entry into the marketplace. But the second one is they're allowing companies to make incredibly minor changes to existing patents and then giving them the ability to be the exclusive sellers of that product for years. Again, sometimes it's even more than 7 years. So when we look at something like insulin, for instance, the patent for insulin was sold for $1 in the 1920s. Why are companies now getting to have exclusive selling rights to insulin within the United States? Because they made minor adjustments to the overall chemistry. And I think most of us look and they say, that's not reasonable. But unfortunately, this is what the federal government is doing through the FDA. And again, a lot of those firms that spend all this money in order to create these products, they also spend a lot of money on lobbyists in order to protect themselves from any sort of competition from overseas. When we're talking about generic brands, we're talking about biosimilars. And This has created a massive problem with respect to artificially restricting supply at a time when demand is not only high, but a demand for some of these drugs is absolutely critical to not only quality of life, but in some cases, potentially saving someone's life. So now that we've kind of identified what the problem is, what are some of the false solutions being put forward by Congresswoman Spanberger and by others? Well, first of all, one of the false solutions is subsidies. It's always the government saying, well, we just need to subsidize either the supply or subsidize the demand. And this is basically the government just taking your tax dollars and then giving it to these companies in an effort to try to lower prices, or giving it to people in an effort to try to get them to be able to afford the drugs that they wouldn't be able to do on their typical pay or income. The problem with this is that anytime you subsidize things, prices tend to go up. And so the government on the other side has attempted to engage in price fixing. So they've said, okay, you can only sell this particular product at this particular price. The problem with that is that if a seller is able to get a higher price somewhere else, then they end up sending all their product to the place where they can get the best price for it. And the only thing worse than expensive drugs is none at all, because you've essentially priced them out of the marketplace. In fact, if anybody is familiar with what happened in the 70s when they were simply trying to do price fixing on certain products to include gasoline, you ended up with long lines, you ended up with less access, and you ended up with a lot of problems. And that always happens with price fixing. You know, politicians like to pretend that if they just set the price at a certain amount, well, then there won't be any second and third order effects or unintended consequences. And that's not how reality works. If they can get a better price somewhere else, you essentially lose access to the product that you wanted, because now it's going somewhere where they don't have those price controls in place. So subsidies and price controls are not the answer. On one side, they're raising the price of something, and on the other side, they're trying to use the law to actually restrict it, when really what they should be focusing on is, again, how do we increase the supply within a market environment so that we have more people going into a field where we need more expertise, we need more people working in that industry, we need more competition to increase accessibility, quality, and to drive down prices. So what are some real solutions that we can actually engage in, and that, you know, are some real policy positions that will improve this situation for everybody looking to find the pharmaceutical products that they need in order to improve or save their lives? Well, the first thing we need to do is reduce the regulations, all right? Nobody's saying that the FDA can't have a role in ensuring the safety of products, but the FDA has increased the regulatory areas so significantly over the last several decades that, again, when a drug is going from 7 months to approval to 7 years to approval, that is incredibly expensive, and there are going to be unintended consequences. There's going to be second and third order effects. Thankfully, the president and the Trump administration moved forward on things like right to try, because we actually had regulations in this country where a terminal patient, a patient with a disease that was killing them and had been given a certain amount of time to live, if they wanted to try an experimental product in order to save their life, the government was coming in and telling them that they weren't allowed to use it. So thankfully, for things like right to try, we've removed those regulatory barriers. And we need to do that in other fields as well. Because right now the FDA has a kind of a perverse incentive, right? If they let a drug go to market early, they will take the blame. But every time they hold up the process, especially when you're holding up the process for 2, 3, 6, 7 years, you're not thinking about all the people that are harmed because you have delayed a life-saving drug being able to make it into the marketplace early. So if we're being intellectually honest about this, we not only have to protect against making sure that a bad drug does not get into the marketplace, we also have to understand that there is an inherent cost associated with keeping a good drug from being able to make it into the marketplace. So go back, look at those regulations, understand that some of the response that we had to the thalidomide issue within Western Europe was an overreaction, and has actually caused harm and potentially death to people that couldn't get access to drugs in a timely manner as a result of onerous regulations. So that's one of the first things we have to do. Reevaluate those regulations and remove the ones that are standing in the way of us having more competition within the pharmaceutical research and development and manufacturing process. The other thing is we need to look at taxes and tariffs. So Obviously, we don't want all of our pharmaceutical supply chain going to a place like China, where we have a hostile communist dictatorship which has ill intentions toward the United States, regularly engages in patent infringement and corporate espionage. We understand that. However, we should be opened up to competition in places like the UK, Canada, which has similar methods for determining whether or not drugs are safe before they can go to market. And by increasing the amount of supply, even if it's from a foreign country like Canada, the UK, we can actually bring down the overall cost of pharmaceuticals, and that's very important. The other thing we need is just more competition, right? So again, when you make the process really expensive in the United States, or you grant monopolistic privileges, or you prevent other companies and countries that we trust from being able to do business in the United States, all of those things reduce competition. And as competition is reduced, prices inevitably go up. Not only that, but quality also typically goes down when you don't have competition, because now pharmaceutical companies are not worried about appealing to the customer as much as they are buying a better lobbyist to make sure that politicians keep those protections in place so they don't have to compete with other companies that might be doing a better job than they are. So we need to remove those anti-competitive regulations, anti-competitive taxes, which stand in the way of us being able to have a robust pharmaceutical research and development market and manufacturing market in order to make it easier for to get us the products that we need. And then ultimately that leads to an increase in supply. When you have an open and competitive market, when you don't have regulations that favor certain companies over other ones, more people go into that marketplace in order to compete and conduct business. Why? Because everyone knows that there is a high demand for good quality pharmaceuticals. And there's a lot of companies out there that know how to make those pharmaceuticals in a safe and responsible manner for a lot cheaper than some of the companies are doing it now. But FDA regulations and other things stand in the way of them being able to do that. So if you remove both the onerous regulations that don't need to be there, and you remove the anti-competitive practices that the government has put into place, all of a sudden you're going to see a flood of people moving into this industry because there's such a high demand. And within a relatively short period of time, we can see more companies producing the products that we need in order to improve quality of life and in order to save lives. So that's kind of a once over the world on what is the problem as we currently see it, what are some of the false solutions that have been put forward that are only making the problem worse, and what are some real solutions that we can implement right away in order to actually bring down the cost, increase the quality, and increase accessibility to pharmaceuticals that we need. Next up, we're going to go through some questions from our audience. Our first one from Elizabeth. Drug prices have been rising for more than a generation, and drug companies make an obscene profit. What do you propose to regulate then in order to bring prices down, or do you advocate for quicker approval process from the FDA? So Elizabeth, this is a great question, and this is kind of the theme that we've gone through this entire time. And a lot of times, when someone says an obscene profit, I always want to say something. Look, profit in and of itself is not the problem, all right? The question is how did you make the profit? If you made a great profit by providing a product and a service that people wanted, that they were able to get a hold of, that made their lives better, that's a good thing. We want that positive incentive. We want that profit motive to drive people to make products and services that we all need and then improve our lives. That's not a bad thing. What's bad is that if you're making a profit as a result of the government coming in and restricting your competition, or the government coming in and controlling the marketplace in such a way that you're the only one that's allowed to sell something, even when it should be open to greater competition. So the problem is not the profit. The problem is, how do you make the profit? And if you're using the government in order to give yourself a competitive advantage over everyone else, that's the problem. And that's one of the biggest things that we see, not just within pharmaceuticals, but within the larger healthcare industry and the economy in general, is companies get to a certain point where they get powerful enough where they go on, they try to find politicians that will write regulations that benefit them, or will write subsidy packages that will benefit them at the expense of their competition. So again, I think it's important that we address the issue, just as you said here, but we need to make sure that we're not demonizing profit, we're demonizing the method in which you got profit, if it was illegitimate or if it was using government force and coercion to prevent other people from competing with you. That's the problem, right? And that's what we can address by reducing some of these regulations, having more expedited processes, and then opening it up to more market competition so we can get people to come in there and again increase the supply. The other one goes, what would be a bill that you could or would want to propose to accomplish the goals of lowering prescription drug prices and streamlining the FDA? So we have a couple out there. And again, I've mentioned some of the things throughout the general podcast on what I would like to do. I think the first step is we need to look at all the different regulations that we currently have in place, especially some of the amendments that went into play in the 1960s that drastically increased the regulatory process that the FDA puts companies through. I think most of us can agree that the FDA going through a process where we make sure that the drug is not dangerous makes a lot of sense. But a lot of these other regulations that have been added don't really do that and makes the process significantly more expensive. Again, just to reiterate, it used to be, and this is at a time when the FDA was, you know, again, prevented the same sort of troubles that we were having in the United States that they were having in Europe. But when you look at the additional regulations that went into place for a problem that we had already solved, right? It took the process over the next several decades from taking several months to get a new drug approved to several years to getting a new drug approved. Some of the most conservative estimates, and by that I mean liberal organizations, have looked at the research, and it can take up to $200 million. That's the low end. $200 million to go through the entire FDA regulatory process in order to get a new drug out to market, right? The higher estimates are sometimes $800 million or even higher than that in order to go through the entire process. So it's important to remember that if we're serious about lowering drug prices, we've got to go back to an FDA that recognizes its responsibility is to help prevent bad or dangerous drugs from being going onto the market. But again, we can still streamline that process to make sure that we're getting access to the pharmaceuticals that people need to, again, improve and help their lives. And I can't emphasize this point enough, right? Because a lot of times people will say, well, look, it's more important that we be slow and cautious. And if it takes 7 years to approve a new drug, well, then that's what it takes because we don't want anyone getting hurt. Okay, I understand that. And yes, it's important that we have a process to make sure that people don't get hurt. But we need to understand is when it takes 7 years to approve a new drug, people are being hurt. Everyone that needed access to that pharmaceutical that couldn't get it for years, who might have died waiting on a waiting list, you know, they're also hurt by this process. So we need to understand that there is a reasonable approach here. It doesn't have to be all one way. It doesn't have to be all another way. We can actually take a reasonable, balanced approach to ensure that we have a safe process that gets life-saving drugs to the people that need it at prices they can actually afford. And streamlining the FDA process and removing some of those barriers and those anti-competitive barriers are very, very important in order to do so. So I want to thank Elizabeth and everyone that sent us in questions. I hope this answered them. Again, we're going to be going through this all the way through Election Day. We got a couple more to go. It's been an exciting process to be able to go through all of these major issues from foreign affairs, taxes, regulations, healthcare, pharmaceuticals. We're looking forward to the next one. If you want to ask some questions for us before the next podcast, you can go to nick4va.com, go on to the podcast tab. You can click on that. You can see what podcasts we have coming up, and you can submit questions that we'll be happy to answer in the podcast. Also, just a reminder, if anyone has questions, or if you're seeing stuff on TV about where I stand on individual positions, or you have friends or neighbors that are asking about what does Nick Freitas really believe about pre-existing conditions, or what does he really believe about national defense, these can all be answered within our podcast or our town hall, which we do every Tuesday at 8 p.m., where I sit here and I just answer questions from the audience. It's very important for us to know that people are able to make an informed decision when they go into the voting booth, and not to have that decision filtered by a bunch of negative attack ads. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had $2.3 million in negative attack ads hit on us, and yet our opponents still won't sit down and actually just have an open and honest debate with us about where we stand on the issues. So this podcast and our town halls are critical to be able to get our information out to people, because ultimately I want people to know exactly where I stand and be able to make that informed choice. Again, this is Nick Freitas with Making the Argument, and this has been a discussion on pharmaceutical and prescription drug prices. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Once again, thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, again, one of the best ways you can do it is by heading over to goodranchers.com with promo code Nick. You're going to get $15 off. You sign up for one of those subscriptions and you're going to get up to $480 of free meat with that subscription. You get to pick top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, bacon. It is all up to you. Plus, if you're looking for gifts to get for the people that are impossible to shop for, goodranchers.com also has gift boxes. You need to act quick. This is part of their overall Black Friday special. So head on over to goodranchers.com, use promo code Nick, and once again, thank you for listening.